I'd like to thank everyone here for making this event possible. It's a great honor to be here. I owe a lot to the Sufis. Many years ago, a very great Sufi told me what to do to avoid dying, so I literally owe my life to him. And since then, I've been saved and helped and supported many, many times by Sufis, so I'd like to do the best I can in a very small way to give back, best I'm able. I'd like to begin with two quotations. First one is from Shamsi Tabriz. And the quotation reads, "It is a long road to reach the universe of the heart." I'll just say that again. It's a long road to reach the universe of the heart. And the second quotation is from Khalil Gibran. This is the original version of a story that he wrote and sent to his girlfriend on the 10th of May, 1916. And the story goes like this. "In the shadow of the temple, my friend and I saw a blind man sitting alone. I left my friend and approached the wise man and greeted him. Then we conversed. And after a while I said, 'Forgive my question, but since when hast thou been blind?' 'From my birth,' he answered. Said I am an astronomer.' Then he placed his hand upon his breast, saying, 'I watch these suns and moons and stars.'" And the quotation from Khalil Gibran we will come to, and we'll be talking around that subject. But the quotation from Shamsi Tabriz, I mean, let's be clear here. Shams was a pretty terrible person. He was terrifying. He was unpredictable. He was scary as hell. But it was somehow his ruthlessness that set Rumi's heart spinning. And so, what is it? It's a long road to reach the universe of the heart. What is this man, this crazy man, saying? Can we look at this in our experience? Because I believe we all believe that somewhere between our eyes and our navel is our heart. And the doctors can get to it, and we can get to it, hopefully, God willing, in meditation. We go into our heart, beautiful, lovely, good meditation, deep meditation. We know where to go, we know how to go there, God willing, and we meditate in our heart, and everything is okay. We go into our heart, we come out, we go and do our things, and then we meditate again in our heart. Everything is in its right place. And here is this guy saying it's a long road to reach the universe of the heart. So what is going on here? Could there be something that we need to look at in our own experience. Because I think that in these times, these very difficult times now, what is needed is experience. Good intentions are fine. Aspiration is wonderful. Longing is tremendous. Love is the best. But experience is needed to help the world in these times. So what I'm going to do is something that's a little bit difficult, but I'm going to have to talk from my own experience. I've committed myself to that now. Would you like to sit down? I've had a little experience, just a little taste of what it is to be in the heart. I think I just need to say this straight away because of what I'm going to say later. And I feel like I need to tell the story of something that happened. Quite a few of us were here, that were there, who were here. And this was about 20, maybe just over 20 years ago. Mrs. Tweedy had a retreat in Switzerland at Schwarzsee. And I remember distinctly the last morning of the retreat, somebody came up to me outside the building near to the lake and said to me, "Peter, this was very interesting this week, because everybody was given a gift. Everybody was given the gift that they needed." And yeah, in my experience, it was a very, very special event, and for many, many people there. Something rained down from the heavens. There was manna came down. Many gifts. And I just would like to say what I was given then. And that was that one day we were in the meditation room. It was a large room, as far as I remember. It was pretty large. And I was sitting with my back against a pillar towards one side of the room. It was almost a hall. And Mrs. Tweedy was sitting over by the wall, the other side of the room. There were a lot of people separating us. It was packed. And she talked. And then we went into meditation. Silent meditation. And there I was, sitting, leaning against the pillow, meditating, and suddenly Mrs. Tweedy appeared in my heart. And it was so stunning because she was more real in my heart, more crystal clear, more physical, more vibrant, more energetic. And Mrs. Tweedy was a very, very energetic person. She was more totally there in my heart than she was physically. And actually, I remember after the meditation, when we got up to go, I went near Mrs. Tweedy, and it was so strange. There she was in my heart, and there she was out there physically. And the real Mrs. Tweedy was in my heart. What was out there physically was just like a kind of a strange reflection. And she was in my heart, and she was busy. And she started showing me how to do the zikr, how to repeat the name of God. And she showed me in great detail. She said, "You do this on the in-breath, you do this on the out-breath." And I started doing it. And after the meditation was over, I knew I had to continue doing it. And she was still there for a long time. And so I went on repeating this name of God. And after Switzerland, I went down to Italy, and it was quite a few weeks before I got back to London. And Mrs. Tweedy then used to be open most of the days of the week. And I went to her house, I went to see her, I spoke with her, I told her what had happened in Switzerland. And she said, yes, good. And she said, this is something to be done 24 hours a day. This is something that can, that has to be done 24 hours a day. Whether you're speaking to someone or anything. And so to the best of my ability, I did that. And the following week, I was back again at Mrs. Tweedy's and something very interesting happened. In public, in the group, Mrs. Tweedy, for the first time, to my knowledge, said she was going to tell everybody in the group to do the repetition of the name Allah. And in the group, she told everybody how to do it on the in-breath, on the out-breath, in exactly the same way that she had shown me in my heart. And so for me, Mrs. Tweedy had started outside, then she was inside, then she was outside doing what she'd been already doing inside. And something in me blew a fuse. I lost my bearings in reality completely. I got in the car after that meeting, and before I got home, I crashed it. And to begin with, when I realized the car was smashed, I sat in the car, and in my heart, I was saying, Allah. And then I had to get out, and I stood on the sidewalk. And in my heart, I was saying, Allah. And the cars all got backed up because the road was blocked by my crashed car. And I was standing there saying, Allah, in my heart. And the police came. And I talked to them and I was saying, Allah, in my heart. And then the tow truck came to tow away the car. And I was saying, Allah. And I went home. And I remember I think it was the next day, but it was very soon afterwards. I was on the phone in my apartment and something terrible happened. I was just sitting on the carpet, on the floor, and something, it was totally black, blacker than black, so shiny black you can't imagine anything like that. I saw it completely two-dimensional, absolutely flat. No solidity to it, whatever, a two-dimensional shape, totally flat, came shooting from outer space, came through the sky, went through the window of my bedroom, and went straight inside me. And I knew something terrible was going to happen. And the next day I got very, very ill. Very sick. And so what happened was, I lost my car, and I just repeated Allah in my heart. I lost my health, and I just repeated the name Allah in my heart. And I lost my job, and I just repeated the name Allah in my heart. And I lost all my friends, and I just said Allah in my heart. There was just one strange man who came to see me. And then eventually, I'm very, very thick-skulled, thick-skinned, whatever, eventually I got the message that I had to go back to my teacher, back to Empedocles, who I'd essentially deserted the last few years. I thought I'd try living on my own in the modern world without him. And the end result was losing everything. It's always what happens when we turn away from our teacher. And I had no choice. I was just drawn back to this strange, strange, ancient, timeless tradition to write about it, to do the best I could to connect with it again, to help people connect with it again. And then it was Empedocles, then it was ancient Greeks. And I came to discover that Empedocles was considered a great Sufi sheikh by certain Persian Sufis in particular, and other Muslims too. And the threads with Sufism became thicker and faster. But it was only actually a few months ago that I really started to understand that this tradition itself is a very, very ancient, primordial, pre-Islamic Sufi tradition. And this tradition it has certain very strange, very subtle, very potent practices. And one of them goes by the name of incubation, which means literally just lying down. And I suspect there may be some Sufis here who think that lying down in meditation is a little bit of a wacky thing to do. Maybe it's some magical practice or a slumber party or something. So let me just try and get the record straight very, very quickly. It was only yesterday that Pia Zia said to me again, with more detail than he had before, that in his particular lineage, the Chisti lineage, actually the highest, the ultimate meditation posture, position, is to lie down on the ground, amal, and let your body consciousness, essentially disintegrate. And I've seen with my own eyes, I was sent by a Sufi sheikh very specifically to a place in eastern Turkey, a very, very remarkable Shiite shrine, where women would come from neighboring countries, not so much from Turkey, but from Syria, from Jordan, from Iraq, and they would just lie down in the dirt. So this is very much a part of modern, still contemporary Sufi tradition. But where I'm most connected with it myself is through the ancient Greeks. And let me just say this very briefly, that to give a kind of a metaphysical underpinning to it. I came to discover through experience and also through ancient texts that these people, these ancient Greeks, They used incubation in three very large senses. Everything else, the day-to-day uses of incubation, all form a part. They fit into this matrix. But the larger picture has three aspects. And the first aspect of lying down in incubation is, this is the state in which it is possible to bring the seeds of wisdom, even to bring the seeds of whole cultures into this world from another world. This is not a meditation practice where you go somewhere else and that's it. You go in order to bring. You have to become an empty vessel. This is actually an act of service. To go, to be given, to collect, and to bring back for the sake of this world. Sometimes even to create a world. And the second greater aspect of incubation is to become the consciousness that maintains this illusion we all think we live in. Because this illusion is an illusion, but it needs maintaining. And it's actually possible to go into a state of incubation and discover, to see that you and other people in the tradition you belong to have been non-stop in the state of incubation for thousands and thousands of years just to keep this appearance going. Because without that consciousness, this world would collapse. And then the third greater aspect is to help watch this illusion disintegrate at the right time. And watch is an important word. This is a tradition of watchers. Maria and I have traced this back actually to beyond 10,000 BC. This is a very, very extraordinary tradition of watching, and it has so many connections with so many other traditions. You can sit down if you want. There are a couple of seats at the front here, or in the middle aisle. Anyway, last year in Georgia, I had a very strange experience one day. I'd had a sense for about a week, a very peculiar, very annoying sense that I wasn't completely present. And it's a bit like if you sometimes, you're not sure, you know, do you have your credit card? Do you have your driver's license? Do you have your watch? Do you have your keys? And you kind of pat your pockets to make sure. And then if you're really not here, you have to pat them again to make sure that you're sure. And I knew something was missing, but I wasn't sure what. But what was clear to me was that a part of me was not present, a part of me was missing. And so I just decided to lie down in incubation and just go into this state of emptiness and see there was anything to be seen. And I think it's simplest if I actually read to you what I wrote down after this, because I'm getting a bit old, my mind doesn't function very well, I forget the details. Everybody's coughing. Everybody feel old or something? See how many people really relate to this, all these amnesiacs around him. It's good to write them down before the brain cells just fall away and kind of disintegrate. So I went into the darkness inside myself, which is essentially what incubation is. And in the far, far distance, I saw the realm of the heart, surrounded by a vast cosmic chasm on every side. It wasn't just an entire solar system, it was a galaxy. And it wasn't just a galaxy, it was a universe. In itself, huge, gigantic, enormous, I didn't have the words to describe it, isolated and totally alone, separated from everything else in the body of creation. And yet the presence of the heart is felt and sustained everywhere throughout existence. Whitish, like a raised cone with an empty hole at the top. To approach the heart through the void, across the cosmic nothingness. This is to approach a place, a point, a reality where you're not disturbed by anything and can't be affected by anything. The deepest stillness and secrecy, apart from everything and yet at the heart of everything. And between it and me lay an infinite abyss, an abyss older than and vaster than the cosmos itself. And I was amazed to see that what I believed to be inside myself was so, so, so very far away. I was astonished at my presumption, my arrogance in believing that I knew what the heart is, that I can sink into it in meditation, that I can rest in it and be safe there. Because what I saw was that that isn't the heart at all. That was just my mental image of the heart, a mental trick, a substitute, like a photograph of some distant place that I keep looking at and confusing with the actual place, and then imagining that I was really there, while in fact I was so, so very far away. We have the entire universe, entire universes inside ourselves. And each time we go into meditation, we need to start to approach and discover the heart all over again. And this experience was absolutely twofold. On one hand, there was the anguish at the absurdity of seeing how I'd tricked myself into believing I knew the heart, into thinking I was familiar with it, could be in it. The anguish at my total separation from the reality I imagined I had easy access to, while in reality, I'm separated from it by an infinite abyss. But then at the same time, there was the paradox of realizing the privilege of just being shown the realm of the heart, of just being allowed to see, to glimpse what it really is, where it really is. The infinitely subtle paradox that in being shown the distance of the heart, I'd also been shown its presence, its absence, its presence at the same time. And as for that abyss I was just on the point of starting to cross, to come to the heart, it's infinite, so there's never any crossing it, never any starting to cross it, and never any arriving, hopelessly absent and absolutely present in its absolute absence. And then I saw something happen. So quickly it would have been the easiest thing in the world not to notice it. Suddenly my mind dropped a curtain down on the whole incident. It has that power. It dropped a curtain on the whole experience. I actually saw it do this out of the corner of my eye. It said, "Forget this ever happened." Remember, I was in meditation still. Forget it ever happened. When you come out of incubation, you will have forgotten it all. You will not remember this reality of the heart. Because if you remember this vision of the infinite reality inside your own body, then my control over you will lose its grip. Then you'll know that I, your mind, the cosmic mind, am just a trickster who prevents you from seeing what's real. This happened so quickly. Within a split second, the curtain had come down. I was supposed to have forgotten. That was the mind's intention. That was the mind's purpose. But I hadn't. The mind had been quick, but this time I'd managed to be quicker. I saw its trick and refused to overlook it as I came out of incubation. Because just as there is inside my body the reality of the heart, which is also the cosmic heart, the heart of the whole of creation, the size of a vast, vast universe in itself, there's also inside me the power and reality of the cosmic mind, which is built and designed to make us forget, to trick us into living our little mortal lives and believing we have a heart we can rest in and access and call our own. So, my friends, what does your mind say about this? Is what your mind says about this real? Or could it be a part of the mind's illusion? How do we know? It's wonderful to have the universal heart inside us. What does that really mean when we're back in our little bodies, going about our daily lives? How do we live these two worlds? If what I saw is right, then this is an illusion. And I actually glimpsed the creator of the illusion, who does not want us to see this reality. And interestingly, the mind can trick us into actually believing that we know what our heart is, that we are familiar with it. I'm not going to say any more. I'm just going to leave you with this. And we can meditate for a few minutes, and if anybody really sincerely from your heart has something to say, from the depths of your heart, that can contribute to this, then please, please do.